Vente Polvorus for creating disturbance.
So, hello, this is Roger Molina. I'm here at the University of Plymouth in the Cognovo program. Welcome to Creative Disturbance. And I'm here with one of the research fellows, Marie Curie research fellows, Jack McKay. So Jack, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do in life.
Yeah, sure.
Some of your ideas.
So as you said, I'm part of the Cognovo program. My background's mainly in computer science and artificial intelligence. And through there, I sort of gained an interest in the cognitive science and neuroscience.
So general. What is your original training in?
Artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence. Yeah. We've been chatting a little bit for the last hour, and there are a number of things we've been talking about. You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about your thesis project.
Sure.
Yesterday, you kind of stopped us in the group discussion because you made it, we were all talking about creativity, and you made the comment that creativity actually was in the category of hard problems.
Yeah, that's right.
So why don't you just tell us what you're thinking about and why you've been thinking about that?
So in cognitive science, I believe there's some problems which can be understood in a sort of functional and mechanical way. So some examples include like face recognition, object recognition, attention, decision making, edge detection. There's lots of things like this which can be understood.
And modularized.
Exactly. And then I believe with these problems you can modularize them. You can see what area of the brain is responsible for this.
Yeah.
You can make a function which tries to describe the procedures which allow this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with face recognition, a very simple one is if it has two eyes and circle, and is circular shaped, then it is a face. So you can make a sort of algorithm to explain what's going on.
You refer to some of the writings of David Chalmers
about
the nature of hard problems. So what is a hard problem?
So David Chalmers, he makes the distinction between the easy problems, which are much like the ones I was explaining before, so attention and face recognition and so on, and he makes a dichotomy between the hard problem, and the hard problem is the problem of qualia and experience, so what it feels like to recognize a face, for example. You can explain how you recognize a face, but what is the experience of recognizing your mother's face? Or...
Okay, so for some reason you feel that creativity is in between.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
What is it about creativity that makes it a pretty hard problem?
Yeah, I believe that creativity can be understood in the same way as the easy problems. And there's two reasons for this, I think. So, the easy problems can be understood because, firstly, we can modularize them and say this brain area is responsible for this. It uses this information, so it uses, with face recognition, we have our memory of faces, it uses that information, it uses some distance measure. And you can sort of put on a little box and say this is responsible for this. And of course, that little box takes uses other outputs of other functions, other little boxes so edge detection and so on.
So in this case of creativity, you think some aspects of creative activity, in fact, can be sub-organized into these kind of modules?
I think it sort of contradicts the idea of creativity to do so. So with a module, you have to explain,
input and output.
Yeah, exactly, input, output, and then there's, so Fodor nicely defined modularity, and a system is modular. I think he has like 9 properties, I can't remember them all.
Yeah.
So the properties are domain specific. So for example, in the visual domain, so face recognition is specific to one domain. It has to be information encapsulated. Information encapsulated means the module, the function, only uses the inputs and the information inside the module to do the calculation. And so creativity, I believe, doesn't satisfy two of 9. There's lots of other ones, which I can't remember them.
So you know, one of the things we're planning to work on with you and the other fellows and the faculty here is to get a more nuanced understanding of creativity. That was a term that Michael Punt has injected into the discussion. And so, you know, as you're now working on a very specific problem on your PhD thesis. Who's your thesis advisor?
Thomas Benneker is my thesis advisor, and he is a computational neuroscientist. I'm interested in computational neuroscience as well. And recently what I've been working on is a little bit of maths called schema theory, which allows you to find structures and hierarchies and data. And I'm interested in if this can be implemented in a physiological way in the brain. So can neurons be implementing this structure?
Okay, so that's a rather clear description of what you're going to be doing for the coming year. You're developing software.
You're
going to be test cases and testing them and so on. So how is this thing that's circulating about creativity being a pretty hard problem going to feed into your own work?
How is it going to feed? I'm interested.
Perhaps you want to come up with a really good idea for your thesis.
So I like explanations which are functional, and so you can explain directly how an engine works or the retina works, for example. You can give a really nice functional explanation of it and a sort of mechanical one, and I really like those type of explanations. And this idea that creativity is a pretty hard problem, what I'm trying to say there is that you can't give that type of explanation for creativity. You can't give this mechanical explanation of creativity. So although I'm interested in I don't think we'll ever be able to give a satisfactory, for me, a satisfactory answer to what creativity is.
So in your own research practice, for instance, do you interact with some of the other PhD
students? Of course.
What's the nature of those interactions?
We're all lots of different disciplines. So we have computer scientists and psychologists and artists and neuroscientists. And our languages and our understandings are all very different. So we have the idea of, for example, something very simple, Like we have words which we all have different, what they mean.
Usage, exactly.
But what I've found is we have quite a...
Yeah, the word I like to use in this discussion is the word prototype.
Exactly.
And in fact, there were a number of conferences that the word prototype is used in very different ways in research communities.
Like psychology understands it.
But
I find there's a meeting ground in philosophy. So I think philosophy offers a language which allows all these disciplines to act, and there's some common philosophical theme we're working towards. Those are the type of interactions I have, sort of philosophical interactions.
Some of the other things that have come up in the discussions here is trying to understand all of you as a group of PhD students and how the particular environment here is feeding into your research activity. So you all share a big research space here. There are 24 of you with workspaces. How much time do you actually spend in that room?
It depends what I'm doing. So it can be quite distracting if you're writing up or reading a lot. If I've got a lot of reading to do or I've got a lot of writing up to do, I'll normally do that at home. But if I'm sort of in the incubation phase of an idea, I'll go and sort of talk to people and do a little bit of work.
And I think there are a lot of seminars here in this other room. Did you actually go to some of
them? Yeah, I go to nearly all of them.
So why do you do that? Isn't that a waste of time?
No. It's quite nice. It's such a good opportunity to hear about all these disciplines that I wouldn't otherwise hear about. And I feel like I've gained a bit of expertise. And for example, psychology, I didn't know so much about. And I feel like I've learned a lot about psychology. And art as well, actually, a lot of the...
How has your idea of what your thesis been changing over the last 18 months?
It's changed a lot. And the process is like, I'm not sure if there's a nice story to the process, how it's changed. So I started off with Thomas. And he was interested in this branch of maths called formal concept analysis. And he'd been writing papers about, so formal concept analysis is about finding concept structures in data sets again. And he was interested in how this could be realized neurally.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, at the beginning, I was working towards some things like that, and I came up with a few ideas. But then I realized that formal concept analysis was restricted in what I wanted to do. So I looked to other areas, then started developing this idea of schema and this schematic lattice. And I found that a much nicer explanation. And now that's what I'm working on. Which
not something that Thomas had been working on.
No, but there's a link between this schema and formal concept analysis. So I was definitely inspired by formal concept analysis to make this schema thing. But I like the schema.
So presumably that evolution is both as a result of you've been doing some coding and software development. You've been reading. You've been talking to him. So how much of the other students affected that evolution of your interest?
Yeah. Okay. So people were interested in genetic algorithms, and I gave a lecture about an introduction to genetic algorithms, and. The schema were originally introduced in the field of genetic algorithms. So schema are used to state the schema theorem and the building block hypothesis. So schema, this sort of the very simple mathematical language, and this language is used to state a few problems. And then I was talking about them, talking about these problems in genetic algorithms. Then I realized that, wait, there's this link between schema and formal concept analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So just by accident, I realized that there's this link, and then I thought about it for about a month. Then I developed the theory and proved an isomorphism between these two things.
Okay, very good then. Okay, good talking to you, and thank you so much for your time.
Got a vintage pulverized for creative disturbance.